It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republican state lawmakers unveil a package of bills aimed at tightening up the unemployment insurance system. This days after voters in the spring election overwhelmingly support a non-binding referendum about how people access assistance. So that is our on-ramp for asking this question: do work requirements help people out of poverty? Join in, call with your questions, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. LaDonna Pavetti is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. That's a nonpartisan policy think tank focused on low-income families. Donna, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
So voters here in Wisconsin very clearly signal their support that people receiving government aid should be required to look for jobs. You've studied social safety net programs for decades. What happens when work requirements are imposed on recipients?
So first of all, I think it's important to clarify sort of some misunderstandings about what is expected of people. So we already have work requirements in a number of programs. And so in the program that I work on most, temporary assistance for needy families, every family, when they come on to get assistance, is required to go through an assessment, and there's a determination made. And if they are able to work, they're required to participate in a work program to help them get to work. In the SNAP program, which is helps people to get food, people who are able-bodied, who do not have dependents, are only able to receive assistance for 3 months in the 36-month period if they're not working or looking for work. The other thing that I think people miss is that we tend to classify people as either workers or not workers. And the reality is that it is a very dynamic system in which people are in and out of jobs. So the majority of people who use public assistance benefits, who can work, are either are working and receiving those benefits because their pay is so low, or they're between jobs and they were working prior to coming on. So I think that we just don't acknowledge this dynamic that happens where people are moving in and out of work. And it's not that we have this one group of people who are consistently out of the labor market and another group of people who are consistently in, particularly in the low-wage labor market. We have this movement in and out, and people misconstrue that as people not working or ever working, and that just is not the reality.
It's not so stark. It sounds like there is a lot of flux. There is a lot of back and forth. Does that have to do with wages? What is the cause of that lack of stability?
So there's a number of causes for that. So one is the labor market itself. So there is a lot of turnover in jobs that pay low wages. People may not get hours that they need. It may be that they have difficulties with transportation getting there. It may be that it's not a good fit. It may be that they get laid off. And then there are also things that happens in people's lives, particularly in TANF, the program that I work on, which serves a lot of family, mostly all families with kids, people may be fleeing domestic violence. They may have mental health issues. They may have health issues that flare up. And so they're unable to work at particular periods. Their childcare may fall apart. So we have both sort of this labor market issue that's going on. And we also have what is the reality of people's lives, particularly when they have low incomes and they are in unstable jobs that don't provide benefits. And their lives can be very precarious at times.
Donna Pavetti with us, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, as we look at the effects of work requirements for government aid programs and what is happening here in Wisconsin and across the nation. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Donna, Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature are saying work requirements for social safety net programs would help our state address workforce shortages that we're seeing. What do you make of that argument?
So I think that argument There isn't evidence that bears that out. And if you go back to what I sort of said, that the majority of people who can work are already working or they're between jobs, that what we know is that people are on benefits without working for very short periods of time, and they will go back into the labor force. So the requirement is not going to create a whole lot of movement into the labor market that's not already going to happen on its own. So it is... Again, it starts from this false assumption that people are not working, do not want to work, and need to be compelled to work, when we know from the research that has been done that that just not is not the reality of the lives of people who use public benefit programs.
And what if you take like a market approach, tying the number of weeks someone is eligible for unemployment benefits to the statewide unemployment rate, which is also a bill under consideration? Do you see that elsewhere?
So the problem with using a statewide or a national unemployment rate is unemployment varies dramatically from community to community. And so that is part of, that's part of a problem, is that you need to think about where do people live, what are the jobs available in those communities, and often we have a mismatch. It doesn't mean just because there are a lot of jobs available that people who receive public benefits have the skills to be able to do those jobs. So it's really trying to think about what is a positive frame for thinking about what are the labor market needs, and how do we train people? How do we make sure that there are skills that people have that are consistent with what those needs are, rather than, again, starting with this false assumption that people don't want to work and need to be compelled to work and punished if they're not doing that.
Looking more closely at TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, and here in Wisconsin, we know it as Wisconsin Works W-2, how is this program different from other social safety nets? How does it stand apart?
So it stands apart, one, for its long history. So TANF was created in 1996 as a replacement for the Aid to Families with Dependent Children, which primarily was a cash assistance program for families. And TANF was created as a block grant, so states get a fixed amount of money. They also have to spend some of their own money. And there are states have to meet what is known as the work participation rate. So they have to have a certain share of the people who they are providing assistance to either looking for work in a select set of activities or in jobs. And if they don't meet those, then there is a penalty. So there is a long history. We're now into almost 27 years of having that program. So we have a long history of looking at what has happened with work requirements. And the thing that stands out most, I would say there's two things that stand out most. One is that what has happened is that the number of people receiving assistance has declined dramatically. So a lot of people are not able to get assistance when they need it. And so people are not served in that system. And the other is that the programs that exist to help people find jobs generally just to have them go back into the same jobs they left. So they end up in low paying jobs that don't provide benefits and don't provide a path out of poverty. So again, most people who come onto assistance are coming after they have had difficulties either in their personal lives or in their work with being able to continue working. And there isn't anything that happens to really sort of help them create, get the education, the skills, the training that would help them to move up the ladder and to move out of poverty. So what we end up seeing is a lot of people who are in and out of jobs, who are not working, who are in very low paying jobs that really don't lead them out of poverty.
Donna Pavetti is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. She has studied TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, for over 25 years in Wisconsin. It's known as Wisconsin Works W-2 program. Call in with questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We explore policies aimed at transitioning people into the workforce and off public aid. State lawmakers are debating, and they held a hearing on a collection of bills that could add restrictions to unemployment assistance. Call in with questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. We have Donna Pavetti, Senior Fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Let's take a call. Lisa is here from Madison. Lisa, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. So in the late 80s, while I was in college, my parents divorced and I had younger siblings at home. We had a family farm, which then had to be sold. My mother was able to get some aid, and then she went on to school to become a nurse. My concern, you know, now is that I don't know that programs today would enable my mother to do that, that she would be trapped in maybe lower paying jobs and unable to get an education. She went on to work for 30 years before retiring. So is that still possible, or would she not, would that not work anymore?
Lisa, thank you. Donna, what is your reaction to Lisa's story?
So technically it is possible. States can provide resources and allow people to participate in programs like going to nursing school, but they have to do so being willing to move out of what the federal law will count towards the work participation rate. So the law is very rigid and has a very strong focus on getting people into jobs quickly. So there is a, states can have people in vocational education for 12 months in their lifetime. Beyond that, states could allow it, but it would not count towards the state meeting their rate. And if the states don't meet the rate, then they get penalized. So it is possible. It doesn't happen very often because states really have continued down this path of this work first model where it's getting people into any job. And it's, as I said before, what ends up happening is people get placed in jobs or are required to take jobs that are the same jobs they could have gotten before they ever came on. So it would be much harder for your mom to do what she did in today's environment than it was some years ago.
Which also brings...
It would also depend on what state she's in, to be honest.
It also brings us to case managers. How key are case managers for helping someone or their household create a plan for that long-term financial stability and the job growth?
So that depends somewhat on sort of the message case managers are given. If they're given the message that their role is for compliance and making sure that people are meeting what we refer to as the work rate or work requirements, then they're often not doing that. They are just sort of a lot of their time. Some estimates are as much as 60% are just in tracking down hours. Are they in activities that will count? Are they in the right number of activities? And do they, we have a timesheet to cover that. So that really restricts the amount of time that case managers have to help people really think about what are their goals and what are the best ways to meeting them. So it is possible for case managers to do that, but it often is not what they are instructed to do as a part of their job. So I don't think we can hold case managers accountable. It is really sort of above them for what the program is designed to do and what the program really encourages case managers to do in terms of how they help people.
That is playing out in a series Marketplace produced investigative series, and it had found Wisconsin is funding contractors to help people get work, but people often end up, as you mentioned, in low pay temporary jobs that aren't getting them to that next financial and career goal. Is that an issue here in Wisconsin and beyond?
That is an issue in Wisconsin and beyond. So again, the system is really designed to move people into jobs quickly and to penalize them and take their cash assistance away so that they don't have money to pay their rent. They don't have money for the things that their kids need if, in fact, they don't meet those requirements. So the system, again, is set up to just sort of keep fueling the movement in and out of low-wage jobs. It's not sort of set up to really think long-term and help people to address the issues that get them into TANF in the first place and to really help them move to a better place than where they started.
Let's take another call now. Sharon is here. Sharon, hi. What would you like to share?
I just wanted to say I have benefited from the food program, and it's not always just low-wage workers either. I worked for 14 years for an advertising agency in Heartland, Wisconsin. After the 2008 financial crisis, I eventually was laid off, and my husband had been a stay-at-home dad because we had three small children. I went on food stamps, got another nice advertising job, went on to run the American Girl catalog in Madison. And when that job ended, because Mattel was mismanaged and they moved those jobs to the West Coast, I again was unemployed. But this time my husband was working, so we didn't need that assistance, nor did we qualify, and that was fine. But when I needed food stamps to support my three children, the state of Wisconsin came through. And I hope that this is not torn away from other families who need assistance and not for any fault of their own.
Sharon, I appreciate you sharing a very personal story. Donna, what do you hear in that?
So I would also like to thank you, Sharon, for sharing that. And I think, you know, I think Sharon points out two things that I think are important. One is that it is not only low-wage workers, right? That may be sort of a lot of people who end up, but we all hit on hard times in our life. And we want to be, is part of our values to have help available when we need it. But I think that Sharon also pointed out sort of that our lives are not static. Things happen in our lives and they change. And when they change, we may need help. And I think, again, this idea that we're either a worker or a not is just not the reality of what we see for people's lives who use public assistance or for anyone's life.
We're with Donna Pavetti, Senior Fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Donna, in search of solutions here, how can states make their social safety net programs like jobless benefits more effective? What are those steps?
So I think there are a number of things that states can do. One is that we need to sort of think about how do we change the narrative and recognize that that people are in the situation Sharon described, whether they are in low-wage jobs or higher-wage jobs, that people are working and they choose to work. And often when they're not, they are unable to work or they're between jobs or they're doing unpaid work. They're caregivers, and that's important work. So I think we need to really work on changing the narrative. I think we need to really think about how do we truly invest in programs that will help people who are moving in and out of low-wage jobs to have better opportunities so that they can move into jobs that are more stable and they won't need to go on and off of assistance. And I think the other thing is we need to really think about what our values are as a country and that we should not be in a position where we take food away from children or from adults as a condition of going to work and recognizing that, you know, people should be able to eat. People should be able to have health care. People should be able to pay their rent. And if they need help doing that as a country, that is a value that we should really hold on to. And that's really just sort of part of our fabric of being a part of a community.
Is the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, is it sufficiently funded?
So that is a tricky question. So I think that, you know, the block grant has been the same as it has been from 1996. What is a bigger issue with the block grant is that it is very flexible. So a lot of the funds that were originally spent to give families cash assistance no longer go to cash assistance. So I think what we need is more accountability within the program for how funds are spent. And we need to think about what is the adequate amount of money to provide families with the resources that they need to be able to make ends meet. And so that we don't create problems down the road. There is research that shows that if we don't invest in families now, then they're more likely to end up in the child welfare system, which is much more expensive. They're likely to end up homeless. They're likely to have more health issues. So by not spending the resources we need now to make sure people have their basic needs met, we pay down the road and we pay at a much higher cost, both in terms of the personal cost as well as the financial cost to government.
Donna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Donna Pavetti is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. That is a nonpartisan policy think tank focused on low-income families. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.